Okay, good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock plus here on the West Coast, and we're getting started on Joy of Sacrifice, and we're going to be looking at the fourth chapter in the fourth sacrifice. And tonight, we're joined by two celebrities. On my right, your left, is Jaswan Baines from Vancouver. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, Mom.
Mom's watching tonight as well. Thank you.
Hi, son.
Hi. Is Fred Steele from the Windy City, Chicago.
Hello.
And they're on a whirlwind tour, and they happen to be here for a little while, and we're going to take advantage of that, and we've asked to join tonight, and we're fortunate enough to have both of them sit with us. So to get started tonight, what I'd like to do is I'd like everybody to just take a pause for a moment, okay? Get the road dust off you a little bit. And actually, we're going to read two quotes. And I'd like, Jaswan, I'd like you to invite you to read one. Is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
How's that? Okay, can you just read through that for us, please? So take your time and listen. Let the words wash over you, and see which of these points, if any, connect with for you. There are, if I remember correctly, there are nine attributes or seven attributes. One of them may touch you. Pay attention as you listen to see what that is and where does it touch you, okay? So let's just try this little experiment. Quiet inside. Sit in a comfortable position. Just for just a moment. And if you would, please.
In motion, bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly, with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee.
Take a moment. That line right there. That one is stuck with you a little bit. Hold it for you. Hold it. Nothing to say. Just remember that particular line. Would one strike you in any way different than...
To be honest, no. I was just sort of listening to Jaz's intonations and didn't really hear the words.
Well, I want to thank Jaswan for reading that. And for me, as I listened to it, it was, first of all, the whole concept of this and the idea of the way it starts just starts me afresh. It starts me afresh every single time. I always get, the bell rings, particularly on the line, with yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. Sense of yearning is, for some reason, is so familiar to me. That sense of yearning in that manner, and so it got me again. Thank you. Did you want to share anything about it, or the feeling of reading it, or?
I was just going to say it was difficult because I remember Jimmy Icardi's song every time I. it's like, oh, it'll be like this. Yeah, the yearning search and the with pity for thy suffering.
Yes. Compassion. So these are moments that we get to just sit with ourselves, and each of us has a signature. Each of us has a duty that we come and an opportunity we come to serve on the planet with, and maybe we'll find that for each other. However, to get into the meat of the matter, the heart of the matter, our task tonight is to give up our habits. And we're reading The Joy of Sacrifice by E.J. Gold. And this is the, for those that can see online and for the videotape, this is the book here. And on the email you may have gotten, there's a link to it if you need to buy a copy. And so let's just get into it a bit, and then we'll talk about the idea of habits and different types of habits in a moment. But I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs, and Simon, if you're there, and or Molly, if you think there's something we need to chat about from the log, you'll give us a high sign, I hope. Okay?
All right. All right.
Thank you. Okay, so this is actually numbered sacrifice number 3, but as we recall, the first sacrifice is 0. And that particular sacrifice was sacrifice of the peace of mind, and we talked at that time at length about the idea of the corridor of madness and how we began to move from the machine and the sleeping machine and the habits of that sleeping machine into the world of the essential self, at which point the machine has certain concerns, and we call that sometimes the corridor of madness. So now, sacrifice of habits, and the byline is life the contrary. It's very interesting to see how these chapters are put together. So let's just read a couple of paragraphs and see what people come up with. Why should one sacrifice one's habits? Almost everyone understands this in an ordinary way. But there is another more important facet to this. The nature of the corridor of madness is such that one is left with the identity and ability to take action in the present only with habits. Then I'm going to read that again. The nature of the corridor of madness is such that one is left with the identity and ability to take action in the present only with habits. One could say that in the deepest self, one is nothing but habits, for only habits survive transition. One cannot depend on the psyche, which provides the mind, body, memory, decision-making apparatus, ordinary good, bad, like, dislike, attitude, and forms of consciousness and sense of identity. Without those psyche-based habits, one is left with what? What are we left with? What's being introduced there? So we've gone down the road a little bit here. We started to with the idea of sacrifice of desires and the sacrifice of comfort. We talked about the idea of austerity. But now we're giving up the habit. So what is being introduced to us here? And EJ is telling us that what are we left with when the psyche, in a sense, drops away? And we're in a particular kind of an invocation of faith. What are we left with at that time?
We're left with what we do automatically.
We're left with what we do automatically in that kind of space, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, barrier here, and that once we get into the waking state, and we're working in the waking state, many of the habits of the machine in a certain way drop away. Things like good, bad, like or dislike, they become certainly less important. So what are we left with? We're left with another form of habit. So, and that's part of what this chapter introduces for me, is that there are habits that maybe on a machine level, we read this and we go, our psychological guilt stuff kicks in and we say, oh yeah, I've got to give up my habits. What are you thinking about then? Why does that come to your brain? The first thing that happens is this guilt trip, right? Oh yeah, I got a lot of bad habits. Maybe you don't. Maybe you have some good habits that you're supposed to recognize as important habits in what the author is telling us is called the corridor of madness. Okay? What might those habits be? What are some habits that we could delineate? Let me ask you a question, both Fred and Jasmine. You've both been many, many times in what we might term as being intense invocational spaces. Do you recall this, like in workshops or different things that we've been in, where the space seems fundamentally different?
Mm-hmm.
It's different than life, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right. And is it clear to you how you behave in those spaces? Or maybe another way to put it, is it clear when there's an inappropriate behavior? Or
when
somebody blows the space. What does that mean? When somebody blows the space. Or something. You can sense that, right?
Sure.
Why do you have the ability to sense that? What is it? Why can you sense something like that? How is it possible for you to sense, oh, this is inappropriate, that's appropriate?
Can I give an example?
Of course.
While you were talking, I was saying the most of my work. And that would have blown the stage.
It depends on how you did it.
True. That was going to be silly.
That's correct. If, for instance, in a space, in a moment like that, if you could be in yourself and in a little conscious, and you could then and say something, you have, in a sense, included her in that space, haven't you? And that's appropriate behavior. So we're not bringing the world into that space. We're increasing that space to include another, to include. And that's where we start to learn some of the traits and skills of things like hospitality. Because if you're in that space, you can't disregard an individual. You can't marginalize them. They're alive, right? They're alive, and you can't help but recognize their How are we doing there? Okay, well, where it had to be the question I asked you. Where is it that you sense the right or wrong of that? Okay, so that particular type of sensing mechanism gave you pause, right? Rather than being silly Fred. Again. You paused for a moment, didn't you?
Sure.
Yes. Why? Okay, and see, it's that sensing mechanism that I'm saying, let's take a moment and embrace that too. The Western-based Catholic, Judeo-Christian training, and I'm not sure if it's the same in the Sikh religion, the one of guilt, but it's so easy to go to a guilt mode, but to hold on to an attribute that works like that, and in a sense we saw it demonstrated well. To hold on to that and embrace it, to embrace, in a sense, a strength, costs something, doesn't it? Now you own that, to own that a little bit. And if you own a little bit, you have the responsibility for it. And what are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about why are we working to engender and empower our essential self, but as an ultimate sacrifice for the absolute, and really to play our role here on the planet.
David.
Sure.
I have a question here from Pianjo. They say, is it like that with the habit because there is no, the volition is missing in the corridor?
Well, the answer is yes. There is no there's no human volition. Okay? And I think that's the issue that Harry, that we need to look at, is to start to discern the difference between the two. When we enter into the corridor of madness, the reason it's maddening is we don't have a regular attribute of measurement that we're used to. I mean, we go to work, you go to work in the bank, and you say, this is right, that's wrong. And others tell you that life dictates that. So when we enter the work, the life of the spirit, we don't have that. We don't have the external telling us what we should do. But we do have, and this is why I say that we're here, the people here that are on this chat that are sitting, certainly that are sitting with me, these are not beginners. These are people down the path a bit. And it's time to start garnering some of the issues and some of the strengths that you have and holding those strengths and let them come forth as well.
So that would mean, if I may say, that the habits that are left there, considering that we could not use our discernment or our volition between choosing what is right or wrong like we do now, we will be left with all those habits that we already have in the pocket, whether that good or bad. It will be almost like an automatic. Habits are automatic.
By definition, habits are automatic. But you can craft them, and you craft them through different tools, but those tools arise from our inner sensing, and our sensing is based on our inner experience of being in that waking state. Because when we're there, we have a different GPS system. We navigate in a different manner. We navigate by a different form of mood. And I don't call it, I'm not talking about psychological mood here. I'm talking about the inner mood. So you can find that habit, but you have to look in a different place, Simon. You don't look in the linear brain so much as what is my heart saying, if that's how you operate. And so
that means if I have the habit already of, let's say, being distracted by things, lose or identification, the habit of identification with things, I will carry on into that state.
Yes. That's why I say at the beginning, often in the beginning of the class, I'll say, let's get rid of the road dust. Let's get rid of the, what I really want is I want people to work just a little bit with their attention to free themselves from life so much. I mean, the fine reading we had was designed to create a barrier between, in a sense, life and where we are now. It's nice, okay? Thoughts, distractions, conditions, correlations.
being distracted.
It can be. But you know, why are we distracted in a space like this? If you start to notice the trigger, one of the things that I've noticed for myself when I like to get distracted in a space like this is I can't bear the energy. The power of the energy right then is too much. I want to get out of that energy. What's the best way to do it? How about if I ruin the space for everybody? Particularly if I bring up something really important. Right? And then that's the way that I bust the balloon. But what's really happening is the ability to handle that energy or not. And how do we handle that energy? Is we have to surrender and surrender and surrender. And when we surrender to a little bit more, we're marching down that corridor of madness. We're further and further away from the happy home of our mechanical madness. So can distraction be a habit? It can be a habit that you use. It might be a very interesting thing, particularly for you, now that I think of it, to observe. And how would you observe something like this? The first thing that we want to do is stop it. So often stop doing that. Wrong answer. You observe it, but you have to observe it like from your peripheral vision of your attention. Because you just become curious as to how that habit works. And you just notice it and you go, wow, that's interesting. There it is, right there. And you just need to leave it alone, because I guarantee you it'll come back. It'll come back. And I was in a meeting at 4:00 this afternoon. Pacific time. And I had to go to get to another meeting by 4:30. But at that moment, the meeting I was presently in, it was a very, very important topic for the person that I was meeting with. And it was kind of starting to be a little tense. I thought, no problem. I'll just tell her I've got to go. I noticed that starting to come up, and what I did, I just decided that if I'm going to be in this space, I'm going to be here forever. I'm willing to be here forever. And boom, just changed. At that moment, we came up with two solutions to a fairly complicated problem. I don't know if I came up with. It just happened. But it was that increase of energy started was the key. She was becoming engaged. So she had been willing to go into that other space. Make sense? So. Thoughts?
For me,
should I take it?
No, I want to hear what Jasmine has to
say. Me too, actually. we'll take, Jasmine's going to make a comment, I believe, and then we're going to have a question for the group.
For me, appropriate and inappropriate behavior. I can see inappropriate behavior. And I can see appropriate behavior, but I can't say why this is inappropriate or why this is appropriate.
Ah.
And often, what I do is I just rest in myself and don't do anything.
A lot of times that's, for me anyway, that is the best response, is to make no sudden moves in the space like that. This this idea, I respond to, I don't know why it's inappropriate or why it's appropriate.
There's no formula.
But where's that question coming from? The question's coming from the linear brain. The linear brain says, gosh, there's got to be a reason. Right? Hey, what's the reason? It's in a different world. We're talking in a different, fundamentally a different world. And it's like somehow your essential self knows. Can we have faith in that essential self? Can we surrender to it? Just a moment, for a moment, give it its time, you know? Give it its time, so to speak. Because sometimes you do know what's an appropriate, an appropriate emotion, response, discussion, question, both of them, many, many, many times over the years. So there was a question? Molly?
David?
Yes.
David? That means that we will be left like children.
Yes, thank you. Did we already address the question, Molly? Do you want to say what the question is? Oh. Simon, are there anything that you want to read from the log for us?
Well, just the comment that the people, D'Angelo says, David, in earlier sessions together, we all had a clear experience of the task or topic. As we progressed to sacrificing desire, things started to become more opaque. Now with the habits, the lens is darker still. What do you suggest as the rule of thumb?
For me, I've chosen this particular book. There were a number of books that people suggested. The reason I chose this particular book was because that for me, it was time for us to start addressing the world of the essential self and to start addressing the idea of this. I call it the technology of voyaging. The book we're going to do after this, God willing, is going to be Life in the Labyrinth. We're going to get further away from land and as we venture out into that sea. But this starts to give us the flavor, just the terminology. It gives us a flavor of a different land. So that's what do I suggest? Is to sit with it. That's what I suggest, Harry. Is just, you know, just in a sense, sit with the darn thing and see what happens in you as we go through it.
And Dave, I want to remind all of us that we went through human biological machines, and one of the key points in that study was the fact that evolutionary transformation takes place only in an awakened biological machine. That is when the essence becomes predominant part of our experience. And in order to develop that idea, we're now studying the joy of sacrifice. And I think perhaps the most important sentence in this particular chapter is the very last paragraph. The primary habit one can approach at this time and with which one has genuine and not just imaginary power is the habit of creating a psyche with which to handle life automatically. Well, that requires a lot of efficiency and elimination of unconsciousness in order to allow our psyche to handle life automatically and facilitate the ability of the essence to come to the fore and become more predominant.
And that paragraph, of course, goes hand in hand with the previous sacrifice where we talk about the sacrifice of desires. And in that chapter, if we remember, Nietzsche doesn't talk about how to sacrifice desires. What he talks about is the idea of living a life of austerity. When we start to introduce one element of austerity, and I even use the term moments of austerity, one thing like, for instance, wash your hands before you eat. Just that, nothing else. Maybe you're going to do no other practice other than that, because we do not live, most of us do not live in a monastic life. So what can you do to inject into that, our own life every day, something that is what I call a moment of austerity? You do things like that. Maybe other things you do, like you don't eat pork, or you don't eat meat, or you don't eat candy bars, or something like that. But, and you will be challenged. Or another one, you take your shoes off before you go into your house or into a particular room. And what happens is that those moments become sanctified. They become sanctified. And it's that power of sanctity within us that is the antidote, in my opinion, to desire. We start living lives that are less complex, that are less engaged in life, in a sense. And once we start living life in that manner, when you start living life in that manner, then this last paragraph makes sense. Because what you do then is you know you have this machine to caretake. That's part of our job. We have this machine to caretake, and it requires certain necessities. The primary habit one can approach at this time then, and with which one has genuine and not just imaginary power, we have power to do this. And that's the habit of creating a psyche that handles life in a more or less simple manner. You know, like, you know, the way when you step out at night, and if you always have to go to the parties, you have to have this or this in your home. So you wind up, if you inject these moments of austerity into your life starts to become more simple. When the life is more simple, there's more of a chance that the essential self has a bit of a go of it, right?
You know, Dave, the way I explained this to myself about 15 years ago was we all have a finite amount of energy or life force in our physical body. And in living an ordinary life, we consume about 99% of that energy in the pursuit of our historical personality. So really, maybe the challenge here is how can we reduce the energy expended by our historical personality in order to free up that energy for the growth and the development and the feeding of our essence. The only way you can do it is by pacifying the historical personality, trying to minimize negative emotions, trying to lessen unconscious behavior of every kind. And in this freeing up of that energy, we trust or believe that it will automatically feed the essence, which is, again, why it says in this chapter that as the essence develops, it eats the psyche little by little, just as the yolk of an egg depends upon the albumen. So just another comment.
Yeah, and what's happening is we have, okay, there's a finite amount of that energy that each of us have, and if we give that energy over to the historical personality or the machine, it's not available for other things. Now, one of the things happens when we indulge in the habit of distraction, for instance, at the inappropriate moment, is that at that point, the machine is harvesting the energy of the essential self. It's taking it back. It's taking its territory back. Does this make sense, what I'm saying here? So you're in a particular space, and we're working in this particular space, and you know you're there, and suddenly you do something, and that energy is in the transformational process of actually developing the essential self. Then you do something. You know, like you get into a big ego argument, and it blows the space. What's happened then is that the machine habits have reached in and grabbed that energy back. It's not a simple battle, guys. It'll go on forever. In our particular level of development, this battle goes on forever. We are battling, in a sense, for the life of the essential self. We're trying to give it a chance. We're trying to give the essential self a chance of coming out. And in order for it to come out, we have to, George used the word, pacify the historical personality. And this is the whole discussion in HDM, is to do that, you apply your attention. Just coat your machine with attention. And then the machine wakes up. But when the machine wakes up, that means its power is diminished. Its power, and then it begins serving the essential.
David,
something's possible. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking, I'm trying to bring into my mind something that I can relate to that state in which we are left only with the habits. I think when we are in that state, if we were in that state, we would be like children, in which they don't know of good or bad. They just do.
Perfect. You're working from, I use the word advisedly, but you're working from instinct.
Yeah, exactly. And that you may name it habit. But you just don't know if you do good or bad. You just do because it's inside. It comes from the instinct, like the children do.
And they just move with delight. Like, you know, in we've talked a lot, I've mentioned a lot from time to time about Spinoza. And in the fourth book of his Ethics, he talks about the free man, he says. And the free man goes about in a life of delight. It's interesting how he uses that word. You're delighted with the world. And you're actually going, for me, for the way it works for me, is that I'm trying to recapture, like having a sense of continual wonder as I walk down the road. And I have that. I have that a good bit, and I like it. I like it a lot.
Where was George pointing?
George is pointing, this is the last paragraph in the book. Well, you're looking for that, then I'll... Go ahead.
Oh.
You were going to say.
Yeah. So maybe a question for George. I wonder if he sees the practice here. Is the habit of creating a psyche with which to handle life automatically is, I'm going to speak metaphorically, it's sort of like you raise your child, and at a certain point it leaves home and you just let go. Hopefully you've built good habits into your child, or they've built good habits into your guidance, and that child will go out and do its thing. I wonder if this isn't asking us, and this is a question for everyone, whether we create an avatar, we'll call it, that just handles life's crap while we go and do the delightful thing that you're talking about here. So what I'm speaking of here is creating a psyche with which to handle. So we're creating something that handles life for us while we do what really matters.
Give me an example.
Besides your child?
Yeah. How about
can you play? Well, okay. So here we go. Food. You can be trained to eat with elegance, or you can be completely, you know, following whatever it is that draws you to food and following it into your mouth with great delight. by your family and your partners to eat with elegance, and you don't have to think about it anymore because your habit is to eat with elegance and nice and quiet and using all of your utensils properly, and you don't affect the space with like sounds and food falling out of your mouth and picking it up with your fingers and jamming it in and stuff falling out, and you don't have to think about, oh my god, I better, you know, it's not like you're a child like learning how to eat, right? You just eat with elegance because that's handled. So you can do other things while you're eating. You don't have to worry about it.
Okay. Sounds good.
that would mean that you are culturized. The process of culturization and the conditioning.
You know, and again, the way I would see it is, look at all of us without exception are involuntary slaves to life. Which is to say that we develop a body of habits that allow our car to roll down the highway downhill for the most part. Once we get the gist of the idea of evolutionary transformation, we begin to put on the brakes of that automatic rolling, and then we come to this last paragraph of the chapter in which we finally discover to simplify is to maximize. That is, as we become much more efficient businessmen or businesswomen in creating a profit, we look to minimize the expenditure of energy in rolling downhill and contribute it, to feed it to our essence, which is really what self-remembering is all about. So, typically, we set aside some portion of our day to self-remember and do nothing, but even while we're out doing the daily necessities of life, we periodically stop to remind ourselves, are we self-remembering?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have a better example than the food because that's a culture thing. I don't know if it was for the rest of you, but I struggled to learn how to tie my shoes. And the energy that it took to, like, figure out what to do with my hands and my fingertips and silly strings to tie a shoe was a monumental effort when I was a young man. Now I do it without thought because I have developed the habit to tie my shoe. And I don't have to sweat over it. I don't have to sweat about it. It's handled. Some part of me, I can automatically know I'm tying my shoe quite well, thank you. That's a better.
His shoes are well tied, by the way.
Yeah.
Good job, friend.
Is that what he's talking?
Yes.
The question is that
things,
what he's talking about, but on a much larger scale?
It's things like that on a continuum, and that's finding those things. But there are excessive habits that we do. Things that we don't need to do that we think are habits. Like people when they say, oh, it's Tuesday night, I've got to go watch my show on TV. It's my show, my American Idol, or my whatever they are. And that's one I heard recently. It's Sunday, time for the big game. That kind of stuff there. Those are also huge habits. Those are forces in the psyche, in the machine, in the historical personality that keep it going in a certain direction. But if you think about it, how does that help or hinder your life? It's just a distraction in a certain way from life. Not too many people that I know that are more serious on the path are really deeply into sports. I hope that's true.
The people that are involved in the sports are deeply into sports?
Are not.
Oh, okay.
I rarely find somebody who knows who the champion of the...
what do you want to know, David?
Arizona Razorbacks or the Chicago Bulls or the Chicago Cubs.
Good. I don't know who the Arizona team is talking about. Okay, good.
It's the team. I just heard that for the last week.
It's the Arkansas movie.
Arkansas? Okay. Well, there you go. And so, you know, so there are habits that we want to automatize that assist us in our life, like tying the shoe, or quickly, you know, and effectively dressing, for instance, and getting ready for your day. Do you wear a tie? Do you have to wear a tie at work?
No.
I used to have to wear a tie when I went to work. Same thing. I would marvel at my hands tying my tie, the complex Windsor knot that it ties. And I can still do it. I don't wear a tie anymore, but I'm not required to. But things like that, replace those with well-thought-out habits, and that is the way to start living your life. The point of this chapter is that we are driven by habits. That is going to happen throughout, in virtually in many things that we do. Put your attention on it and see how it works. And is this have I simplified my life through the use of a simplified habit in this area? Or have I retained other things that interfere? For instance, you eat food because you deserve it. You deserve the pleasure. You know, oh, I worked really hard. I can have an extra beer right now. I really did work hard. I get this now. What's that? Okay?
I don't trust that.
Well, it's there. That's what I'm saying. It's there. That's what we have to grapple with.
I think, David, that you mentioned that's a very clarifying thing, point that you make, because we are going to be all the time with habits. I mean, that's the premises in the teaching, in this habit. You will have a habit in that state, in the corridor. Now, the thing is to start switching those habits with not useful for the ones that are somehow good to us. Correct?
Well, if we actually put our attention on it, that starts to occur. And that's this process of, as the essence develops, the deep psyche, it's taking that energy that the psyche has robbed, and it's starting to use it for the purpose of transformation. That is transformation. As this occurs, one approaches the door marked unknown. And indeed, not only unknown, but unknowable. That door which stands before the corridor of madness, through which the psyche is completely broken down and absorbed. At the end, the essence emerges, freshly born, without complexity. Okay?
David, it's Mark in Winnipeg.
Hey, Mark. Greetings.
Greetings. Yeah, there are two examples from the gentleman from Chicago there that it was interesting. One is eating, and the other one was tying one's shoes. And both of those activities are fairly complicated, and both are very useful with respect to inner work, because it takes a while to eat and cut and chew, and that's a lot of impressions that you can transubstantiate, putting your attention on. The same thing with tying your laces and your posture. They're fairly complicated things, and those things are very useful for working on oneself with respect to inner work. But once again, you can habitualize those things very easily by just eating unconsciously and tying your shoes very unconsciously.
As with everything in every chapter in every book we're going to read, the spice that we put into it is called attention. So if we put our attention into our meal and we understand what it means to cook a meal for ourselves and how that we're really transubstantiating the food for our work life, and we watch that occur when we make a meal, we cook, when we select the vegetables that we purchase, and we and we prepare them in a particular way. We're effective at that point, and that effectiveness becomes that kind of habit, but it's a habit that is subservient in a sense to the essential self. Another one that comes up as I'm scanning here for a minute is cleanliness and cleaning a space. And when that becomes a particular kind of habit for us, something happens, okay? And you begin to understand what it means and why you would want to clean such a space. You're going to do it anyway, but if you do it, oh my God, I have to go vacuum. That's one thing. But if you do it because you're preparing the Zohar temple, you're preparing the temple because the temple needs to be prepared that day. And needs prepared that day, maybe not just for you. Maybe you're like me and you live by yourself. But I prepare the temple, and one day, guess what? Somebody shows up. And they show up, and there they are. It's ready for them. I don't know who they are or when they're going to come, but then they're there. And so, in a certain way, you do that work for the sake of those that aren't there at the moment. You live with others. Make sense? Okay? Get that broom out. I was saved by washing dishes, so I can tell you that's the truth.
And I was saved by watching tapes and listening to them.
I understand that one. I understand it. That's all I could do. But goodness gracious, I could do it. And I could go from where I was to the dishes. I could wash the dishes.
And David, I saw you in the basement. I come down after several hours on the tapes, and I see you with Rudy down there. And I just wanted to say hello. I didn't want to join in. I had my own little private purgatory upstairs.
There's a little book in Christian mysticism written by someone named Brother Lawrence. And Brother Lawrence was the least of the monks in this particular monastery. He wasn't that smart. He wasn't anything. So he was always asked to wash the dishes. He cleaned up after everybody else. And he wrote this remarkable testimony of his work and the godliness that he found. And as he puts it, I found God among the soap bubbles. And yes, he did. How are we doing on time? So, at the very end, I'm going to read something to put us on notice for the next class. But we have just about 3 or 4 minutes left. Are there any other comments that need to be addressed right now, Simon?
I will read something. Mark wrote this, which seems to me what a lot of our practices are all about, developing good habits, even if it is only the habit of continually working to awaken, that makes it easier and more likely for us to be going in the direction of the work.
Thank you, Mark. Good. All right, well, goodness, we're making progress here because it looks like we've sacrificed quite a bit in the last few. My colleagues here have sacrificed, there's hardly anything left, I guess, is what they're telling me. We've sacrificed the peace of mind already, and now we've already sacrificed comfort. And a couple of weeks ago, we sacrificed desires, right? Now we sacrificed already have it. What's left?
David, I have a question here from Jan Flower. She says, would the habit, the emotional habits, be considered here too?
Try it again, please.
Jan Flower, let me. She's saying that if in the name of the habits, how about emotional habits?
Yeah, emotional habits. Boy, I don't want to say are almost always extra, but they're often extra. I mean, the habit of someone says this, and this to you, and immediately you get angry. Or they say this, and this to you, and you immediately, your ego just gets expanded. Those are habits. They're no different. But it's the same thing. It's that energy just goes, boom. You lose the energy from it, don't you? The same thing. Watch those things when somebody does something like that to you, and use the pond exercise from practical work and self, and just let it pass through you. Consider when someone says something to you, and your ego just inflates or deflates, just the same thing. Just notice it. Okay? The answer is yes, Jan Flower. Very good question. But wait a minute, it looks like there are 19 sacrifices. Oh my gosh. Maybe we can just skip to the end. But, unfortunately, next week we have sacrifice number 4, the sacrifice of ordinary life, with the subtitle, Life of the Unclean. Look at this meaning. Hey, you won't be here. You guys are cutting out, aren't you? Today is Wednesday. Well, yeah. Oh, good. Then you can lead us in the sacrifice of what was it again?
The unclean. No, ordinary life.
Oh. Okay, very quickly then. So, I'm going to read this last thing here. And we're going to read the last thing. I've read it maybe a dozen times in my classes, and I'm just seeing if anybody has the answer to these. So, we'll close with this. Okay. The passions of delusion are inexhaustible. I vow to extinguish them all at once. The number of beings is endless. I vow to help save them all. The truth cannot be told. I vow to tell it. The way which cannot be followed is unattainable. I vow to attain it. Thank you for coming. I look forward to seeing you next week, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, for Joyous Sacrifice.
Thanks, David.
Good night.
Good night, David.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye. Bye, Mark.